just one more effort by the organized opposition to really try to politicize the permitting structure.
An anti-pebble mine initiative has enough signatures to make it on the ballot. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Attorney General talks about a plan to give tribal courts broader authority.
Nothing's chiseled in stone. I want to find a model and make it work and start growing it throughout the state.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Crowley, committed to Alaska for nearly 60 years. From basketball games to sled dog races, Crowley supports events that bring Alaskans together. Crowley supports what matters, and public radio matters. CPDAlaska.com. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Alaska's Transportation Department has agreed to pay $332,000 for violations of the Federal Safe Water Drinking Water Act. The department will also close and sample 55 motor vehicle waste disposal wells at state vehicle repair and maintenance facilities across Alaska by 2018 as part of the settlement with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. EPA says the wells are outdated and some pose a risk to groundwater used for drinking water. The wells, according to an EPA release, were used to dispose of stormwater, snowmelt, and water used to wash vehicles. Transportation Department spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says efforts have been underway to decommission the wells for some time. The release says six have already been closed. Woodrow says his department will need to request funding for closure-related costs. A group against the proposed Pebble Mine has secured enough signatures to get their initiative on the ballot. The Division of Elections has been counting signatures for weeks, and today, the Bristol Bay Forever Initiative cleared the 30,000 mark needed to put their question to a vote. The initiative requires legislative approval of a large-scale mining project in the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve. Art Hackney is a spokesman for the initiative group. He says the sponsors are narrowly focused on protecting just one salmon habitat.
You don't have other entities saying, yeah, but it might affect me over here, it might affect me over here. This is just about this one fishery.
The legislature is already required to vote on oil and gas projects in the region. Mike Heatwall represents the Pebble Partnership, which has mineral rights to the land. He says his group is still deciding how they're going to approach the initiative and that they question its constitutionality.
It's not going to stop Pebble, and it's just one more effort by the organized opposition to really try to politicize the permitting structure for a resource development project in the state. And the question Alaskans should be looking at is, okay, if it passes for Bristol Bay this go-around, what region of the state is next?
The Division of Elections still needs to complete their signature count before the Bristol Bay Forever Initiative can get the final go-ahead from the state. If it is approved, it will be the second proposition to make it onto the August primary ballot. A referendum to repeal the state's new oil tax system got clearance earlier this year. An agreement to allow tribal courts to have more law enforcement jurisdiction in rural Alaska may be right around the corner. It was discussed extensively today on the public radio call-in show Talk of Alaska by Attorney General Michael Garrity and the chairman of a congressionally mandated commission that just released a report calling on Alaska to do more to bring law enforcement to the bush. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
Attorney General Garrity knows the pressure is on. He was consulted as the Indian Law and Order Commission put together its report, and he knew it would be critical of the state government.
The newspaper described it as a blistering attack, and that may be an apt description. I
I thought it could have had a little more balance and context on some of the issues, but on the fundamental challenge to the state, I mean, that message resonated with me, and I believe the governor as well.
Commission Chairman Troy Ide wanted to know more about that. The report says that centralized law enforcement doesn't work, and Alaska's been going in the wrong direction, litigating against tribal jurisdiction. Ide points out there are more than 100 courts in the state that are now controlled by tribes.
Some of them are very, you know, well-developed systems, and others are partial systems, and some are very informal. But the bottom line is that focusing on what works, which is local justice systems to deal with local problems, particularly with respect to the crimes that plague these communities, so many of them involving alcohol and substance abuse.
And Attorney General Garrity has been at work on a draft agreement that he hopes can be used to outline how the state's more than 100 tribal courts might be able to gain more power and even state funding to make it work. This follows up on a pledge made to the Alaska Federation of Natives by Governor Parnell.
The governor announced these initiatives at AFN 2 weeks ago, and we've since rolled out the agreement. We've been working on it for a number of months, and so we've started.
Garrity said he can't make the draft public yet, but it is in the hands of the Tenena Chiefs Conference Native Nonprofit Corporation.
I was encouraged by the initial response we received from the Tenena Chiefs, but they had questions, they had concerns, and they were cautious, but I mean, I think the response was positive, and we want to sit down with them at their earliest convenience to start working through the issues. And I, you know, nothing's chiseled in stone. I want to find a model and make it work and start growing it throughout the state.
Garrity said one sticking point might be jurisdiction over village residents who are not tribal members. The draft agreement would allow a defendant to choose whether they want to be tried by the state or the tribe. Using the state system might result in a criminal record, while a tribal system might not. Garrity said he has an open mind on the state funding issue. There is a possibility the agreement might be ready by the time the Rural Providers Conference comes up early next month. Chairman Ide will be there along with some of his fellow commission members. He's encouraged to see the state turning in this direction.
Having more ability to work constructively with tribal courts so that they can combat basic crimes like alcohol abuse and domestic violence is definitely the way to go, and I'm very encouraged to have that conversation. There's a lot we can agree on.
But there is no sign of movement on another of the commission's recommendations to allow Native corporations to turn land over to tribes. It's pretty clear that would take an act of Congress. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Another Fairbanks neighborhood lost power this morning after a tree fell on a transmission line. Electricity was restored in about 2 hours, but Golden Valley Electric spokeswoman Corrine Bradish says the tree is thought to have been weakened by last week's windstorm, a problem, she says, that is expected to persist.
We're still going to have weeks and weeks of work out in our service territory removing trees just like this. It's going to take a while. We still have a lot of cleanup work to do after we get all power restored.
Bradish stresses that people should not go near trees on power lines, as they can carry high-voltage electricity to the ground. Crews continue to fix poles and lines damaged by wind and falling trees last week. Golden Valley estimated about 400 homes remained without power as of this morning. KUAC's Dan Bross has an update.
The amount of work that can go into getting one home back online was evident Monday at a worksite along the Chena River in West Fairbanks, where contract lineman Eric Johnson oversaw a replacement of a pole snapped off by a falling tree last week.
We've had to get that old pole out of there, and we put the new pole in. Now we're going to hang the transformer and get the guys on it. And then we'll get this wire up, get it sagged, and then we'll be able to go down here and put the fuses back in and throw the power to it.
The six-hour pole replacement project happened just a couple hundred feet from Dean Merkulieff's Riverside Cabin. Merkulieff, who was without electricity since last Wednesday's storm, says he got by with a power inverter and a generator.
Yeah, we made it. I've been lucky so far. Pipes and everything are okay, yeah.
Hundreds more like Merkulieff are having to wait a little longer as line crews work their way from site to site, fixing downed wire and poles. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the role of shamanism in Tlingit culture.
Dr. Sobolov has pounded on the table and says everything has a spirit. Even this table has a spirit.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Senator Mark Begich is proposing a change to the Affordable Care Act that would make cheaper insurance options available. The Expanded Consumer Choice Act would add a new tier of coverage to the range of plans available on the individual market starting in 2015. Begich wants to call them copper plans. They would be less expensive and have higher deductibles than the bronze, silver, gold, and platinum plans currently available. Begich says he's been talking with small business owners and individuals who want more affordable coverage options under the new law.
What I keep hearing from people is just make sure the choices are there, but those core benefits aren't taken away. Preventive care and making sure people don't get denied because of pre-existing conditions and carrying your kid to the age of 26, very important pieces of the puzzle.
Some consumers would be able to use subsidies to pay for copper plans. The law currently allows people under age 30 to buy higher deductible catastrophic plans, but they aren't eligible for subsidies. Begich says having another option is especially important for a state like Alaska, where healthcare premiums are so high. The Affordable Care Act requirements and benefits have generally made those premiums even more expensive. Begich says he doesn't know how cheap the copper plans would be.
Definitely be less than the lowest cost bronze plan. There's no question about that. How much less is hard to say yet until they design the detail of it. But right now, the law prevents that from happening, so we want to fix that so it allows it to happen.
Begich sent a letter outlining the idea to President Obama today. The Department of Interior today announced it paid Alaska $19 million over the previous year for oil and gas development on federal land in the state. That's a few million more than the 2012 disbursement, but a fraction of the billions Alaska reaps each year from oil development on state-owned lands like Prudhoe Bay. The government pays states a portion of the rents, royalties, and bonuses it takes in from energy and mineral production. The state with the biggest federal disbursement in the past year was Wyoming at nearly $1 billion. The smallest payment, a mere $38, went to North Carolina. GCI and KTUU Television have been negotiating a new deal to broadcast the NBC affiliate to rural communities. Without a deal, subscribers in those areas will have to settle for something else as talks continue. That's what KCHU's Tony Gorman and others found out.
Okay, it's the first snow day of the year in Valdez. I have no problem staying in my apartment because Sunday is reserved for watching football.
And he's got himself a 9-yard gain.
As I watch the Seahawks orchestrate a comeback win over the Buccaneers, I click on the TV guide to see if there's a good matchup on NBC Sunday Night Football.
Okay, let's get the 4 o'clock. Spectre Gadget? What the heck?
Eventually, I found out it was a matchup made for prime time, the Cowboys and Saints at the Superdome, but I didn't get to see Tony Romo battle Drew Brees because instead of seeing this on Channel 2... this was on. Football fans and others in Valdez, Cordova, Kodiak, Kotzebue, Nome, Bethel, Kapurik, Barrow, and the rest of the North Slope probably had the same reaction when they saw the Stars Kids channel in place of K2TV. That's because the latest extension of the carriage agreement between GCI and K2 expired at midnight on November 8th. Alaska's only cable provider and NBC affiliate have been working on a new deal since September 30th. When the first deadline on October 16th approached, the two sides extended the deadline. Now that has passed and the two sides still don't have a deal. So what's the holdup? It depends on who you ask. Both have traded barbs on their respective websites. K2 spokesperson Brad Hilwick says the disagreement wasn't economical.
The points that were kind of sticking points is GCI was unwilling to make some concessions on non-economic conditions that we viewed as anti-competitive going forward, and ones that would challenge our ability to compete fairly as a TV station.
Those concessions include GCI's insistence on carrying another NBC signal on its rural systems, placing the station on a basic tier, which would mean it would be the lowest cost option on the cable system, refusing to carry the station in high definition to rural Alaska, and not allowing the station to add a second signal onto their primary signal. GCI Vice President David Morris says different.
There has been some movement, but I'm still pulling together the total numbers, but it was an astronomical ask, and we have moved together in some respects, but it's still quite a bit apart.
Morris says K2 presented GCI with significant fees to carry its signal to rural areas of the state. He wouldn't give the station's asking price. Exclusivity was also an issue.
They want to lock the market up. They want to put that in contract so that we will only carry them and no one else anywhere in the state. And we think that is just a real bad idea to say that you will never carry any other voice except theirs.
Morris believes K2 did not want to pay for its carriage fees for its rural Alaska signal. He says the station neglected to ask for the retransmission when the initial agreement expired, and GCI had to pay the expenses for the station's signal as part of the agreement. Hilwick says K2 offered to carry the signal for free until the sides ironed out a deal, but it was turned down.
We find it very unfortunate that GCI chose to move forward with its threat to take it. KTUU off its cable systems in rural Alaska, and we're disappointed at the way things are right now.
GCI has denied any offer to carry K2 for free during negotiations. While the two sides continue to work on a deal, rural GCI subscribers will have to settle for the Starz Kids channel on a temporary basis. If they want NBC really bad, they have to turn to ARCS. ARCS will carry 9 hours of K2 programming from Monday through Friday, 7.5 hours on Saturday, and 6 hours on Sunday. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
A new report from the state shows a substantial decline in inhalant abuse across Alaska, but huffing, as it's called, is still most prevalent among teens. KNOM's Zachariah Hughes reports.
Last month, after a Tuntutuliak man was discovered to have died from intentionally inhaling propane, the state's section of epidemiology assembled a review of its data on inhalants. Huffing, or inhalant abuse, is breathing in chemical fumes on purpose to achieve a euphoric state. According to a bulletin put out by the state, deaths occurring from huffing in the United States approach around 200 annually. Ali Hamadi manages the environmental health program in the state's section of epidemiology. He says the risks from abusing inhalants are serious.
One could have impaired judgment. You could have hearing loss, you could have nervous system issues, your nerves could be affected, you could have seizures, coma, or even death, as we've seen from a few cases. And long term, you know, depends what they inhale. If it's something that contains benzene or whatnot, you may have problems with the liver, the kidney, the heart, may even lead to, you know, some cancers.
Hamade and a colleague examined self-reported data from high schoolers taking part in the Alaska Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Their findings were that 5-7% of Alaska high school students have abused inhalants at some point. Huffing tends to be more of a problem among teens than adults. Hamade says a big part of the reason for that is accessibility.
I would say it's more of a problem in teenagers, mostly because they may not have easy access to some of the, you know, to different things that older people may have. It's easily accessible and it tends to fly under the radar, and some have called it the silent killer because of that.
The demographic conclusions in this latest bulletin are limited. Rates of abuse are highest in the state's interior region at 12%, and students who are already at risk are 4 times as likely to have used inhalants compared with their low-risk peers. The most important finding, however, is the steady decline in rates of huffing since public health officials started collecting data nearly 2 decades ago. down to about half of what it was in 1995. Hamade credits this decline to public information campaigns in the last few years. The next step is awareness as a preventative strategy. Hamade says healthcare providers, too, are starting to become first responders in detecting inhalant abuse. I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
In Unalaska, residents braved chilly weather on Saturday for a home-cooked Filipino dinner and a chance to support the local Phil-Am Association's typhoon relief efforts. KUCB's Annie Ropeek has the story.
The line spilled out the door at the Burma Road Chapel. While it was cold and drizzly outside, there were piles of hot adobo, rice, and egg rolls to be had inside, all prepared and served by members of the Phil-Am Association. Kathy Liu sat at a table in the chapel with a friend eating pancit, a traditional noodle dish. She says they came hungry and were happy to donate.
The Filipino food is always so good, but definitely want to support the cause.
The buffet line packed the chapel's small space. Most people didn't stick around to eat and walked away with stacks of to-go boxes for their families at home. But that was just fine with Phil-Am members helping out at the dinner like Ruel Villamore.
You know, it's a small community, but it's such a big heart. Everybody's here. It's amazing.
Phil-Am charged $12 a plate, but many people chose to give more. The group raised more than $20,000 at the event alone. And that's not counting their other fundraising efforts. They've placed donation boxes at grocery stores around town, and Phil-Am has formally asked Unalaska's City Council to consider making a contribution from their discretionary budget. Former mayor and city council member Frank Kelty advocated for that donation at a city council meeting this month. He says Unalaska has a history of lending a hand after disasters like September 11th. And he says the typhoon hits close to home for Alaskans.
Unalaska is one of the largest Filipino communities in the state. And if they so choose to assist, I think it's a great thing to do, especially with the devastation that we've seen in the central part of the Philippines.
City Council is expected to vote on making a donation at their meeting next week. Meanwhile, Phil-Am members will get together this week to talk about holding more fundraisers and to decide what to do with the money they've raised so far. At meetings before the dinner, they said they wanted to find a relief organization that would reach typhoon victims as quickly as possible. Some members of Unalaska's Filipino community still haven't gotten in touch with family in the hardest-hit areas of the country. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
The Tlingit people of Southeast Alaska no longer practice shamanism, but elements of it still exist in their culture today. That's according to anthropologist and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell, who spoke Monday as part of SHI's Native American History Month lecture series. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Shamanism used to be a major component of Tlingit life. Rosita Worrell says every clan had a shaman before Russian and American colonization largely forced the Tlingit people to abandon their traditional religion.
Shamanism is generally associated with hunting, fishing, and gathering societies that often migrate with seasons to follow their food sources. To bring food, health, and protection from evil, shamans seek connections with animal powers through their rituals.
Worrell says the shaman's responsibilities included maintaining the well-being of the clan, acting as a military advisor, assuring hunting and fishing success, predicting future events, and curing illnesses. To do that, they performed rituals designed to ward off hostile and dangerous spirits and call upon good spirits to support the clan's welfare. Worrell says Tlingits believe that great shaman traveled in both the physical and spiritual world, and spirits chose certain people to be shaman.
The majority of spirits with which the shaman makes his alliances are animals, animal spirits. This reflects a widespread belief by cultures that practice shamanism that animals inhabited the world long before human beings and are essential to people because of the unique knowledge that animals possess.
She says Tlingit clans last practiced traditional shamanism in the 1950s, but she argues it still pervades the rituals and beliefs of Southeast Alaska Natives today. For instance, Worrell says Tlingits, including the late Reverend Dr. Walter Soboloff, still believe all objects possess some sort of spiritual essence.
I've had meetings here in this room where people like our spiritual leader, Dr. Soboloff, has pounded on the table and says, everything has a spirit. Even this table has a spirit.
About 15 years ago at a Klan conference organized by the Heritage Institute, Worrell says several elders attributed modern social problems, such as alcoholism and suicide, to Tlingit societies being out of balance.
In our society, we have a number of practices to ensure both social and spiritual balance. And they were holding that we were out of spiritual and social balance, and this was the cause of the social illnesses that affect our society.
She says that discussion led to some of SHI's most successful cultural programs. Worrell says the influence of shamanism on modern Tlingit life is perhaps most evident in the use of sacred objects and regalia in ceremonial acts, including memorial celebrations.
When our ceremonial and sacred objects are brought out and the spirits are addressed or called upon in the same way as they were in earlier times.
Worrell says many Tlingit elders are reluctant to discuss shamanism, perhaps due to the punishment Native people endured at the hands of colonizers for practicing their religion. She says it's unlikely traditional shamanism will ever be completely revitalized, but some Tlingits are looking at ways to incorporate more of the old practices in modern ceremonies. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Tony Gorman in Valdez, Zachariah Hughes in Nome, Annie Ropeek in Unalaska, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Those living with asthma know that each day their life can take several different routes. So take care of yourself with daily medication and you'll be well-rested and eager to take on the day. Miss taking your medication and you'll end up with restless sleep, days at home sick, or even in the emergency room. So treat your asthma even when you're feeling your best to keep you from your worst. Information at asthmainalaska.org or 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association. A message to parents from the Alaska Department of Education. Learning to read is the basis for all future learning. Parents can help their children get off to a good start as readers. Read with your young children every day. Do lots of talking with your kids. Make up stories together. Play games with words like rhyming games. Encourage your kids to write and draw stories and ask your school how you can help your children become good readers. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.